for civil rights in Santa Cruz. Bonfire Spirits Broadside is coming through December 23rd, 1989. One of our last shows of the year, and it could be one of the better ones. We're looking for Bubble Lady KC to join us as co-host if she can find the studio. We'll keep your fingers on the right dial here and give a call to 437-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. That's 437-3772. Tune in and call in. About 15 to 8, we're talking to
Mary.
And Mary, you say you went to the mayor, Mayor Keith Sugar, to talk to him about the fact that when you went to look for a room in a house, you found there were 10 people there looking for the same room?
Apartment, one-bedroom apartment, and there was no bathtub. I have to have a bathtub in my condition. You know what he told me at first? He said, wanna, you know, join the homeless, something like that.
That's what Keith Sugar said.
Yeah.
How did you happen to, did you make an appointment? Did you walk up to him? How did that work?
I made an appointment.
And did you talk to him today? Today, of course, is
no,
December 7th.
No, last week. And then he told me about this guy, I don't know, to, you know, I went to see this, talk to him over the phone. He,
did he help you get your house, or?
No, he shifted me on to, some woman called me today, and she said, I'll send you a list. It's probably the same list that I got already, you know.
Oh.
And the list I have, they're not renting.
So, wow.
They're not renting yet. They're all closed, you know.
Really?
The list is all closed. And, I don't know. And then the housing authority sent me this here paper to fill out saying, this is an update, you know, for an apartment to see if you're still, you know, we do that every so often. So, I filled it out and I didn't hear from him yet.
How old are you?
74.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
20 years.
And how often has it happened that you need to move from one place to another?
Well, the first place I lived 14 years, and then I moved over here, and it was very cold, and into PG&E bill was pretty high, you know, and the you know where the heat was going upstairs.
So you're now having to move because the landlord is what, raising the rent, or what's the situation?
No, because he wants to rent it to two people. He can get more money.
He was renting it to one. Now he wants to rent it to two.
Yeah, he can get more money, but.
Hey, listen, you got to show some sympathy for these landlords, man. I mean, aren't landlords the backbone of our economy?
Yeah, but anyway,
backstab of our economy.
He doesn't like you to complain about anything.
You mean Mayor Sugar?
No, the landlord.
Well, did Mayor Sugar, what was his ultimate response? Did he say he was going to work for rent control, or did he say he was going to work on anything for help renters? What did he tell you?
No, he just says, well, what do you want me to do? And that's, I said, well, I tried everything, you know. I don't know what to do.
How long did you talk to him for?
About 5 minutes.
So he gave you 5 minutes, a pat on the shoulder, and then showed you out?
Well,
why am I putting words in your mouth? Sorry, I don't mean to do that.
I'll see what I can know. You to call me Thursday.
He said to call you Thursday?
Yeah, on Monday, but I went in, and he says, call me on Thursday.
And you called him on Thursday?
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, no, I called and I had the wrong number. It was the wrong number, so I went in, and he told the woman he was swamped at work, so he told her to give me this number to call.
And that's the way it is at the mayor's office. Hopefully Mary got some good information from Mayor Sugar, or Sugar Cheeks, as we'll be calling him, in this cold weather. In the studio with us is another cheeky person, that woman about bubbles, KC. Hey, Karen.
KC, the bubble lady.
Bubble lady. And speak into the mic so they can hear you, for heaven's sake.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
And you're going to be co-hosting with us tonight? Is that the story?
I'm here.
You're going to be doing some
share?
Flesh.
You're a lump of flesh.
I'd like to point out everybody's... Well, we'll get into the flesh thing a little bit later, but or possibly a little bit sooner. Who knows?
Well, I have to squeal. That's so embarrassing.
That can happen. And if you're in the same studio with me, you never know what's next. Or,
I think we should sing maybe some holiday tunes.
I brought some Christmas carols along, such as the old favorite, Away on Vacation, No Time for the Poor, the old song about Mayor Byers, updated to deal with Keith Sugar's new persona as mayor of Santa Cruz. And in case anybody has any ideas or wants to join in the chorus when we start doing some singing, I got to pull these lyrics out of my bag. You can give a call to 427-3772. That's the calling number for a free radio here at 96.3 FM. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, as mentioned before, and I am Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Norris, and hey, you got an hour and three quarters of me coming your way, so sit back and take it like a woman. Or if you can't take it like a woman, call in and kick my ass. Or at least get in touch and tell me what your thoughts are. Any comments, co-host, on the...
I'd like to say hi to Steve Argue. Hello, Mr. Steve Argue.
That's that jailbird in the county jail who was caught. Well, he, you want to describe what his crime was?
Well, you pretty much know what it is, don't you? He was stepping in to assist a lady with her child who was being brutalized by a police officer.
Officer David LeFevre, we might know.
Yeah, and I thought it was ridiculous to try somebody basically for, basically a deed that any good citizen would do. I personally didn't see why Officer LeFevre himself wasn't up there being tried for brutalizing someone in the first place.
That's the system
as we know it and don't love it. So, anyway... Happy holidays. That note.
Or clank, bang, 9 months in jail, depending on how you stand.
Did he give me more time?
He got 6 months, and he got an extension, I believe, of 2 months for declining to do what he called slave labor at the jail. So he's in there for 8 months until, I guess, next June.
Well, I hope he's still resisting. It's ridiculous to be jailed for something that was basically an act done in good conscience and then be told you have to work. It's
or at least to spend 9 months in jail for one blow to the nose of a police officer. I think the police department regarded it as a political matter, and I suspect it might have been viewed in that light by Judge Robert Artichoke Hart Attic, as I call him. He got his name, as you may remember, from his... Where'd he give it? It was a two-month jail sentence, or was it a 45-day jail sentence, for Sandra Loringer for serving free food in Santa Cruz in 1989. A lot of us got arrested for it. Only Sandra Loringer and Brian Flanagan Staley got convicted in trials. The mayor, then Mayor Marty Wernhout, who directed that whole seize the soup operation over many months, and never apologized, by the way. Still hasn't apologized to this day.
Thou shalt not be charitable. Wouldn't Scrooge love that sort of behavior?
Hey, it's a Santa Cruz Scrooge Christmas for a lot of homeless people out there. I think, interestingly enough, I was kind of surfing the internet, as they like to say. And I came up with a couple of interesting stories from the heartland, from Wichita, Kansas. Local pastor plans to ask city council members to end a permit requirement for feeding homeless people in Knopfzeger Park. Maybe I should read this. For more than 4 years, the Reverend Shedra Moore, members of her church, have been feeding homeless people on Sundays in Knopfzeger Park. Then a few weeks ago, the city threw up a roadblock and began requiring churches to pay for a $25 an hour permit to feed people in the park. Moore wants to know where Wichita City Council members stand on the issue, and she's going to ask them at Tuesday's council meeting. Why would the city charge churches to take care of the city's own homeless people, she said. Mayor Bob Knight says he's sympathetic to Moore's point of view. I'm not at all interested in being an adversary to the most vulnerable people in our community, he said. But,
actions speak louder than words.
He wants to keep Knopfziger Park downtown at Douglas and St. Francis clean.
Of what?
Clean. Clean and open for everyone's use. Well, let's just say for the right sort of people.
Right, yes.
We're editorializing here. Let me continue the story. Mayor Bob Knight of Wichita, Kansas, wants to keep the Knopfziger Park clean and open for everyone's use. Old Town merchants and police want the homeless to stay out of the half-acre park. So it's almost everyone's use. Let's put it this way, everyone that matters. I mean, these homeless people are really, you know, they're nameless. They're just sort of the homeless, you know. I mean, certainly they could find other places to roost. Maybe they can move south for this summer.
Why don't they start making, like, special T-shirts for the homeless, like with a big scarlet H on the front or something?
It would help distinguish them. I mean, some of these homeless are pretty patient.
Spell it through your entire life.
You know, they hide. You know, you don't even know they're homeless till later. They conceal from their employers that they're homeless. I find that really kind of sinister. You know, they...
How shifty.
You know, it is pretty shifty, and I know that Santa Cruz considered a requirement that the... Actually, there is currently a law in Santa Cruz that if you falsely advertise what you're going to be spending money for on a placard, well, that's a form of misdemeanor. Actually, it's an infraction the first time you do it, and it's a misdemeanor up to 6 months in jail the second time. So I think it might be time for us to start investigating the claims of these so-called homeless people who hang out downtown looking for quarters. I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, who's really checking up on this? Are police checking for, you know, major sex offenders, criminals, and ne'er-do-wells? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I think Scrooge would love this sort of, you know, idea.
That's Mayor Sugar, not Mayor Scrooge.
Actions speak louder than words, as I said before, and we can just, you know, get rid of that surplus population.
Bob Knight.
Perhaps
a model for Mayor
Kansas
Sugar
Kansas again. Right.
In the days ahead. Said that he wants to keep this park that they're trying to keep the homeless out of clean and open to everybody's use. Old Town merchants and police want the homeless to stay out of the half-acre park. Some of the homeless and poor people who once gathered there engaged in prostitution and drug dealing. Unlike, I'm sure, everyone in the houses who probably have quite a clean record. We know those homeless people are naturally drug dealing prostitutes.
Yeah, people who live in houses never have sex and never do drugs.
Hardly ever, at least. That's for sure. Interfaith Ministries plan to join with other groups to serve a meal to the homeless Sunday in Knopfziger Park, said Sam Moiskins, executive director of Interfaith Ministries. They do not plan to buy a permit. Some criminals coming down the road here. We're simply going to feed them on Sunday to give our statement that we think they have as much right to be there as anyone else, he said. The guy's obviously a demented, felonious individual. Muskins wants the city to help find a solution rather than chasing the homeless from one location to another. Moore's goal is to get the council to reverse the Wichita Board of Park and Rec's decision to have the police start enforcing the permit law. Wichita police have asked the park board for stronger permit enforcement. Officers say the feedings generate trash and enable alcoholics and drug abusers to buy liquor and drugs with money they would have spent on food. This is a brilliant plan. The depth of this vision really astonishes me. But Moore, pastor of the Word of the Lord International Church, said the churches do not leave behind trash. As for homeless people with drug and alcohol problems, the churches may be providing the only food they get. Well, obviously the answer to that is, to get rid of the problem, you starve the source. I mean, mitts make lice, let's face it.
Yeah.
Right, Casey?
Right.
I think that's pretty clear.
Read on. Is there more?
There is more.
Wow,
not quite, not finished yet.
Not done yet.
And
wow.
For homeless people with drug and alcohol problems, the churches may provide the only food they get. Her congregation of about 75 people must come up with $100 a month or more if there are 5 Sundays in a month just to pay the firm permit fee.
Just say no to paying the fee. Hmm. Just say no.
You are yourself, of course, a known lawbreaker, Casey, bubbling away.
Breaking the law.
This is the woman I want to point out to all you out there. You can't see her here, but she is a real bubblehead.
This is a woman who...
Yeah. I'm levitating, even.
She's bubblicious. And what she's been doing is really kind of shocking. She, as you may have read in the papers a year or two ago,
terrifying.
She was caught with a bubble-making machine in her hands, interfering with traffic and disturbing passerbys by putting out these kind of soapy bubbles on the avenue.
It was a bubble wand. You know, maybe the officer thought I was going to, like, mesmerize the traffic with this wand. You know, but somehow put, like, a spell on them or something, and they were going to go helter-skelter and run into, like, sidewalks and things. I don't know.
Something. I don't know what they were. Let me finish this article. I'm almost done here. So anyway, she needs to come up with $100 a month to feed 75 people in the 5 Sundays to pay the permit fee. She does not want the city to take over feeding the homeless. She said, I just would want the city to stop hindering us from doing our work, Moore said. Knight said he would like to work with Moore, that's the mayor, would like to work with the pastor to find a different way to help the homeless, perhaps to help the homeless out of town.
Yeah, what am I
help
saying?
Help the homeless out of life or something.
Yeah, right. Help different way to help the homeless, perhaps by finding a new location to serve the food, possibly Texas or Vancouver or British Columbia. Excellent spot.
You know, I was listening to your last show, and that lady who, you know, was working very hard to keep her job, and she couldn't reveal that she was homeless to her boss, and once she did, the boss was very adamant that before he was retiring, that he was going to help her out of her job, since it was such a struggle for her to stay in it.
So
you know, like I was,
like
I was talking about a couple of days ago, about the homeless people who passed away, the thing on Tuesday.
There was a memorial on Tuesday.
The memorial
service center, which actually the names of over 60 homeless people were read aloud. Who have died since 1997.
Yeah. So instead of like an examination of why it might be difficult and unpleasant to stay in a certain area, they want to continue making it unpleasant for certain people, the homeless.
Exactly.
And let's not even call them people. And then just help them out of town. Where they'll be helped out of that town and out of that town. You know,
well, you
how
can't
goes.
Make homelessness attractive or everybody would want to do it. It's such a kind of a pleasant condition. This really has been emphasized again and again.
It's a party.
It's clear.
Yeehaw.
Continuing and finally ending this story, you're interrupted. You're making a pungent comment here. By the way, that all you out there listening might want to dial in and
dial
give
in.
Us your thoughts. I mean, we've got to find some way to stop these homeless people from eating. I mean, the more they eat, the more likely they are to reproduce, more drug problems, more alcohol problems, you know, more bumping into them on the sidewalk, more embarrassment problems. Bunny shoes might find more people sitting on the bench in front of their shoe store in downtown Pacific Avenue. That would be uncomfortable for them. It's a real problem. So perhaps Mayor Knight is taking a kind of an enlightened stand by pressing for $100 to feed these folks. I mean, you know, you gotta tax those who engage in this kind of conduct, or you know, where is it going to lead? Anyway, continuing with this, I would just want the city to stop hindering us from doing our work. Moore said. Knight said he would like to work with Moore to find a different way to help homeless people, perhaps by finding a new location to serve the food. He said he wants to keep the park clean, but does not want to send a message that helping homeless people is less important. If there's a social need in terms of tending to the needs of the homeless, maybe we can find another way to do it. The council meeting begins at 9 a.m. Tuesday, that was last Tuesday, at City Hall. Now, I have an interesting follow-up story, which I also picked off the Internet. Maybe we can interrupt that one as well, if it seems amusing.
I'll do my best.
This is, again, from the Wichita Eagle, which is, a Wichita paper. Where would they be without us? Faith groups gathered Sunday, this is December 20th story, in downtown's Knoftseger Park to feed the homeless and protest park permits. This is by Jennifer Cones Roy, the Wichita Eagle. Some of Wichita's homeless showed up for a free dinner Sunday in Knoftseger Park, but the police never arrived. Interfaith Ministries had hoped for a police action to draw attention to its refusal to buy the $25 an hour permit it calls punitive to those who serve the poor. Interfaith, a coalition of several Wichita churches and religious groups, served a dinner of turkey and roast beef to about 30 people gathered in the park. Although the city's Board of Parks and Recreation began requiring the permit in November, no police officers tried to run interfaith members off from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. while food was being served. If they do, said Interfaith Ministries' Fran Wilson, it would be a large, large statement. I don't think it would be to the city's advantage. Enforcement of downtown park permits and of vagrancy, jaywalking, and loitering laws were stepped up with the city's start of renovation of the Eaton Hotel, a local landmark directly west across St. Francis Street from Knoftseger Park. Interfaith used Sunday's dinner to issue a public statement calling upon city leaders to address discrimination issues against poor people and to seek solutions to homelessness with input from city's religious groups. We trust our city leaders to locate a safe place for poor people to congregate and enjoy the simple amenities of food, shelter, and decent sanitation, the organization said in a statement they distributed at the park. However, until this facility is found, we will continue to serve those in need wherever they may be. We will not pay a punitive fee that discriminates against the very people we seek to serve. Sam Muskins, Interfaith Ministries Executive Director, said that in the past 6 months, officials have gone out of their way to ignore the input of low-income citizens and faith ministries regarding housing and other critical issues. They have left low-income and homeless issues to religious communities, but they don't bring us into the dialogue, Muskins said. Where would they be without us? Gosh, doesn't this sound a little familiar? I mean,
yeah, sounding like money taking precedence over people again. You know, really, they should couch the church here, the ministry should couch their argument in terms of they are exercising their faith. I mean, there's a biblical tenet that how can you love God if you cannot show love to the brother that you see sitting right next to you and is right in front of you? So, in essence, by giving them this, making them pay this punitive fee, they're actually standing in the way of these people exercising their faith, their conscience. And if they argue it from that point, they should say, let us separate church and state and let us practice our faith by feeding these people who are God's creatures.
Indeed. Indeed, they're probably saying that, you know, in some of their other statements, certainly a matter of freedom of religion and common sense, and also basic civil right for a citizen, whatever her his religious
inclination,
to be able to feed someone in a public place. Of course, Food Not Bombs facing this whole issue up in San Francisco. Police stopped arresting them in November because Willie Brown perhaps was worried about the publicity. But now that he has won election again as mayor up there, he may resume the harassment, as has been the case in Los Angeles. There's a story I'm going to read, hopefully, if I can find the text. That's, I prepared it for last show, but I haven't got it ready yet for this show, where Los Angeles Food Not Bombs is now being arrested in Pershing Park, again, for feeding the homeless in public spaces. This is kind of a deal that comes up when redevelopment happens. So, for instance, we noticed in Wichita, they were apparently redoing the Eaton Hotel, presumably in an upscale way. This happened in San Jose when they started to redevelop the downtown in Salinas, when they started to redevelop the Salinas area. And, of course, in San Francisco at Civic Center, when they began to redevelop the San Francisco downtown area, although perhaps that followed and was part of their Matrix Drive Away the Homeless program. Also, I'm not quite finished with this story yet, in Santa Cruz, of course, the Homeless Issues Task Force, the $10,000 commission funded by the city last March, finally set up in August, I guess it was, reached its August or September, they got their they had their first meetings, and they got their full component of people in October. They're pretty slow, in other words, the city bureaucrats in getting this together. They issued recommendations immediately suggesting that the violence against homeless people, lack of shelter, only 20% of the homeless have any option for shelter in Santa Cruz, and the fact that six have died in the last 3 months led them to urge Mayor Keith Sugar to put on the agenda for the last council meeting of the year, which was last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday, actually, a measure saying we will suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances until such time as there are safe zones set up. And, you know, the Homeless Issues Task Force knew that they didn't have a majority in the city council, but they also knew that Keith Sugar was the man who had the courage to present that proposal a year ago, even when Catherine Byers, or we call her Sleeping Ban Byers, then the mayor, and still really the shadow mayor, she has the power of the majority, kind of, Fitzmaurice tends to run with her, it looks like, and at least it has a number of votes for the last year. We had hoped he would, or they had hoped, we all hoped, I guess the Homeless Issues Task Force particularly, because they unanimously passed this, they urged him to just put this on the agenda, even if it was an emergency item, even if it got defeated. Sugar wouldn't even make the attempt. Sugar said, no, I haven't got the votes. In essence, it said, I won't put it on the agenda until I have the votes. And since Byers has said she will never vote for it, or she won't vote for it, and he isn't going to vote for it in the foreseeable future. And yet, of course, our basic civil rights for the homeless, the idea that you don't arrest someone for sleeping unless you have a legal place for them to go. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying people should be able to sleep anywhere and everywhere, as Rotkin in the past has smeared our position, but apparently has taken to be more accurate in his criticism.
What would be thought of as an undesirable place to sleep?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily... As a concession to the merchants, if the merchants would support, and we have been urging them to support, legal places in industrial zones like Harvey West Park and Mission Street Extension and putting porta potties out there,
open up a couple of the parks at night, or a parking structure which has already toilet facilities.
Mysterious arm is moving.
Yeah, we're looking at some stuff in the studio.
Levitating things in the studio, indeed. Ladies and gentlemen.
But if there would open up a one of those places already exists, wouldn't cost a lot of money. Then we could say, then the rest of the city, no, you shouldn't sleep in the rest of the city because there are legal places to sleep. But, you know, this not only won't the city do this, but not only won't the city council pass it, but Mayor Sugar, the most liberal person on the city council, won't even put it on the agenda, won't even attempt to have the matter brought up. And as in essence said, he won't bring it up at all until November.
So why do you bother going to people, depending on them to take some sort of action when, frankly, it is bullshit and nonsense, and anybody with half a brain could figure it out? Why not just sleep if you need to sleep, open up your yard to somebody who needs a place to go or to take a shower? Why do we, pander to the powers that be, who basically want to hold you in a state of dependency on them, and they want you to conform to a certain image of what a citizen is and a good consumer and so forth and so on? Why do we continue kvetching about they're not doing this and not doing that? They're not about to do this or that.
Well,
why don't we just circumvent all of that? Quit being dependent on them to take some sort of action that, frankly, they're not going to take.
I catch your drift, Casey. I think people should, of course, engage in these private charitable efforts, and I also think people do.
That's
what people do outside.
Right.
Every night there are, 500 to 1,500 homeless people sleeping, in spite of Mayor Keith Sugar's failure to put these items on the agenda, in spite of Shadow Mayor Byer's refusal to take the kind of action we expected from her based upon what she has said in past years. And in spite of the fact that the police run around and harass a proportion of the homeless population at night in a way that makes everybody unsafe, because if you don't know when you're going to be harassed, then you hide more deeply and you hide more in less safe places. Let's put it this way, you don't hide in a group, in a large visible group, because then you would draw the police down on you, perhaps. And the problem there is we've had reports of 30 to 50 beatings this year. Some of which have sent people to the hospital, only one of which has resulted in any conviction. That's the beating of Joe Barker. So it's a bad situation, and it's one which, of course, is being ignored. And the reason we talk about city council, the reason I talk about it, I know, is because it's a point of pressure, and it's not that we are relying on city council to do anything. No, we are pointing out the fact that the established political folks who should be dealing with these problems are routinely denying human rights to their poorest citizens, and that the community should be informed that this is happening. And so every individual should take whatever steps he or he thinks is appropriate to redress the situation. I have to agree with that.
I really think that the people of Santa Cruz really do understand, the housing situation, how hard it is for just regular folks who don't have a good paying job to have a place to go sometimes, and sometimes have transitional periods. That's why we have the term couch surfing, because it's a reality.
Anyway, the story from Wichita, Kansas concludes.
Oh, you're not done yet?
Not yet.
Oh, don't let me interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. They have left the low-income and homeless issues to religious communities, but they don't bring us into the dialogue, Muskin said. Where would they be without us? Pastor Shedra Moore and members of her congregation from Word of the Lord International Church were also in the park collecting warm clothing and money to help the poorest of the city's poor. They did purchase the permit, but weren't happy about it. Moore said members of her congregation began weekend feeding and ministering to the downtown homeless more than 4 years ago. They contacted the Parks Department and were told then that no permits would be required. They were told food handlers' cards may be required to serve large numbers of people at a time. They contacted the health department, took the required classes, and got their food handlers' cards.
Oh, my God.
Then we started the feedings here with the blessings of the city leaders, Moore said. Now almost 5 years later, they're charging us. We did what they told us to do. The city should keep their word to us. Here's an interjection, and I'm still not finished with this article. Keith McHenry of Food Now Bombs in San Francisco encountered exactly the same mentality, and probably for exactly the same reason. He was not bothered by the city police for feeding people, which he was doing three times weekly in 1988, until he applied for permits. Because certain legalistic members of his collective, the Food Not Bombs collective, wanted to follow the law even though he advised against it because he said you'll simply draw down the heat of the city. They know we're feeding. They can take action if they want. The minute he applied for a permit, mass arrests began of food not bombs in Golden Gate Park. And then eventually they granted them a permit, and then eventually a year later they withdrew the entire permit process in order to criminalize food not bombs. And food not bombs have been under a permanent injunction in San Francisco ever since. Ironically, even though I am an atheist myself and a pretty aggressive one, I believe that the belief in a deity is a delusion. That's my personal belief, and I know a lot of the great majority of the country disagrees with me on that, as is their right. Nonetheless, I spent the longest time in jail in my life serving people food. And I served people food, repeatedly, but I was arrested for one instance of rice and beans back in 1993 in the fall, and I served, 27 days in jail for it. And again, the motivation here, I think, is the same motivation as pushes the city authorities to go after religious groups, is they are being pressed by downtown merchants and commercial interests to restrict basic human rights, even when that means clear violations of the First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, all part of the First Amendment, because money talks. Really, it really does.
Money and forces.
But it is also true that the voice of the people, when they get their asses together and get out on the streets and do something real,
right,
like they did in Seattle, like they did in San Francisco, by putting Ammiano in the runoff with Brown, although they couldn't beat the money in the end, Brown won. I think real things can happen, and historically that's where our faith is, at least that's where my faith is. Let me finish this article, and then I'll take that tape off your mouth there. Goes like this. We were told food handlers' cards may be required to serve large numbers of people at a time. They contacted the health department, took the required classes in Wichita, Kansas, and got their food handlers' cards. Then we started feeding through with the blessings of the city leaders, Moore said. 5 years later, they're charging us. We did what they told us to do. The city should have kept their word to us. The redevelopment of Old Town and the city's core is creating a world of two separate realities for Wichita's haves and have-nots, said Reverend Jeanette James, who once had a ministry for the homeless close to the park. People who come to Old Town to eat a sumptuous meal don't have to look at the people in the same area who can't eat or find shelter, she said. We need to think about how to treat our homeless and poor. There are issues people need to face. One downtown resident who until recently was homeless said police harassment of the homeless and low-income people in the Old Town area is highly discriminatory. When I'm jaywalking behind 15-year-old kids with an open container and the police turn around and stop only me, it's very selective to single us out, he said. It's not cheap either. It's a $48 ticket. Santa Cruz thinks it's more like a $162 ticket, although it could be as little as $50, I think. The poor have always been in the downtown area, said Dennis and Patsy Shirley, who offered a money donation to Moore's group Sunday. It's crazy. Other cities try to help their homeless, Dennis Shirley said. Even when we were little kids, this area was known for helping the homeless. Patsy Shirley agreed. We're not happy with the city charging a permit to feed these guys, she said. We're all in this thing together. That's from the Wichita Eagle on December 20th.
We're talking with Ernie Chessmaster in jailbird. What are you doing going to jail, Ernie?
Well, I was walking down the street Monday evening,
right,
and two officers were walking in the opposite direction. And as we passed, one of the officers identified me as someone he'd given a sleeping ticket to, a camping ticket to, for a camping infraction.
So he immediately consulted his memory and his computer.
Or somebody's computer. Anyway, he detained me while he called in to find out if I'd paid for the same. And on finding that I didn't, decided to further harass me in any way he possibly could, and did. And one of the things he asked me about was my name. He refused to believe that my name was Ernie, even though I produced a letter to my mother with my name on it. And
what's the name of this interesting officer?
I'll look it up, but I got the papers on him.
Okay.
He's a great case of somebody with a good memory, but no brain to do anything with such memory.
Or possibly his heart is too small for his brain.
He also possesses a fairly vicious sense of humor, you know. He playfully threatened to keep my money in my possession since I didn't have my name on the bills and stuff, you know.
And when did this happen?
Monday.
What time?
Monday evening, about 4:30.
Where did it happen?
Walking by the
from here?
Yeah, it was in front of the coffee establishment over there.
Coffee roasting?
No, the
Starbucks?
Starbucks. I just couldn't think of Starbucks.
So he ended up taking you to jail? Or writing you out a warrant?
Yeah, he ended up taking me to jail, and I've been there for the last 4 days.
4 days? I mean, you didn't get OR'd or had a bail on you?
Well, you know, it was very strange. Monday night while I was there, you know, I had to spend endless hours in a holding tank freezing. But when I finally called me, the officer on deck, whoever, said he was going to just give me court dates and release me right away. And he says, you'll get your stuff in about an hour, so just wait in the holding room there. 2 hours went by, 3 hours, and then finally he comes back and goes, gee, we didn't get a number for your ID card, so we don't really know who you are. And I said, you don't know who I am? You have my fingerprint, you have my picture, you know, your ID system here is an absolute killer to the DMV, and you're worried about a DMV number? But obviously that wasn't the real reason why they detained me. They may have decided that this would be the last they ever saw of me if they didn't keep me there. So I guess they decided to keep me there and get what they could out of me rather than nothing.
So were you just held without bail then?
No, I had bail, but it was like, you know, I pictured that I was only going to be there a very short time, so there was no point in posting bail.
What was the bail?
It was a few hundred dollars. I think ultimately it became $272. It might have been, but that was after I pled to one charge. It might have been more than that. Maybe around 300 something.
What did you appear before?
I appeared before two judges. I appeared before Danner, and I appeared before what's the guy that begins with an A?
Attic.
Attic, yeah.
And why before two?
Well, there were two, two different like little Mickey Mouse things that they had on me. An interesting thing happened though. Yesterday,
hang on a second.
Yeah. I was saying that I want to sit down and finish the interview sitting down.
Sure.
That's all right.
No, go ahead.
My legs are killing me.
All right.
I charge extra for standing up.
I can't stand you. I mean, I don't know. You can't stand for me. I can see that.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing that occurred yesterday. I went before Judge Attic. And
the first judge you went before?
No, I had gone before Danner and pled on some other matter the day before.
You didn't put them all in one court?
No.
That's pretty strange.
Well, it turned out well for me, I guess. I'm not sure. Anyway, it turned out well for me for whatever reason. Because it wasn't going to turn out well for me as it was going with Attic because, I had a camping ticket and a failure to appear for the camping ticket.
Yeah, that's half the camping tickets out of failures to appear.
Yeah, but he wanted 9 days out of me for that, days in jail. And I said, is there an option to pay a fine or to do community service? No, he just wanted jail out of me.
Did he say why?
He said because of my failure to appear.
Did you ask for a jury trial on a failure to appear?
Well, no.
You have a right to.
I know. What I did is like, I went through about five times of having him give me time to think and go on to other matters. And as I thought about it, I thought of my options and I thought of questions to be asking. So when he'd come back to me, I'd start asking him questions, you know. So I asked him what my bail would be if I pled not guilty. I asked him what the breakdown was on the fine on which he was basing my, and I asked him if he said.
What did he tell you on that? What was the fine? Breakdown.
He didn't give me a thorough breakdown, really. He just
threw. The sleeping ban itself was a cost of?
No, he didn't.
He said whether it was 54 or 162.
He didn't say. He just threw a couple of numbers at and then gave me the total. It was real arrogant, you know. I asked him for a breakdown on it, and he just says, "Well, there's this and there's that, and the total is this," you know. He didn't, but he didn't give me all the things that made that total. All right, so. When the last time he came to me to ask me how I was going to plead, I said, well, if I don't plead now, when's the next time I can plead? And he said, in 20 minutes. And I said, no, I mean, if I don't plead today, when would be another day when I could plead? And he says, well, when do you want to plead? And I said, tomorrow. He says, okay, 8:30. So that when that was yesterday, so tomorrow being today, I showed up. They brought me to court at 8:30, basically, but it wasn't Attic who I was appearing before.
Danner.
It was Danner, which turned out to be my great fortune because Danner dropped the charges on me and let me go.
Interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, I had already noticed that there was a...
He gave you time served, but that was 4 days in jail, right?
Well, two of those days were applied to another matter, the time served.
That was the murder matter back in Denver?
No, it was another rinky-dink thing, but that was when I first appeared before Danner, the thing I pled to he applied 2 days to, so I had only two more days to apply to anything left. Anyways, he just, it was just Friday, and, you know, he gives you $40 if you want to serve out a fine. Danner's department, which I think is two, I'm not sure, his department gives you $40 per day to serve out a fine, whereas Attic only gives you $30 a day.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. I also had heard Municipal Court and Superior Court have been merged.
Yes, that's true.
So there was kind of like a new shakedown going on there as far as...
Yeah, that was Chess Master Ernie, who we interviewed about a month and a half ago on the streets on Pacific Avenue. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It sounds like the phone. Let's see who's on the line here.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
It is the phone.
Well, good.
I was listening to them. I wanted to sort of concur. I've been judge watching a little bit in the last few months, and I noticed Danner do the same thing that Ernie described twice. It's like he thought the whole thing of the guys being held was so absurd. Even the one guy had only been in there for a couple hours, he dismissed the whole thing based on time, sir.
Now, these were on sleeping band tickets or something?
One was, and one was... Well, no, they were actually both warrants, but the warrant in one case had come from a sleeping band ticket, and I can't remember what the other one was.
Well, I've had different experiences with Danner. I mean, I thought perhaps he'd be a good judge, but we know that he completely rewrote the...
I'm not saying he's up to you.
He completely rewrote the penal code on the case of Dennis Rehm, which is really an important case where... We've talked about that on the air. The guy that there's a you can't get jail a person for an infraction, and Danner now claims you can, which is a very significant judicial rewriting of the law. But hopefully, we're going to find another case to appeal that. And he also
it needs to be appealed. I'm not saying take your puzzles to the man.
In another case,
I'm just saying I've seen him act appropriately to something that seems absurd to even be in court more than once in a short period of time.
Well, that's good. I initially thought Danner was better, but I've kind of changed my mind. But, you know,
I'm not trying to say he's better in general.
Mixed information. So it's nice to hear when, you know, there's less harassment of people for sleeping. But, you know, what he needs to do, of course, is find the law unconstitutional locally. And that would be the, I mean, it's not just, you know, like we're looking for some kind of...
we need to find a way to expose all these judges.
It's not just a miracle kind of thing. It's sort of an obvious thing that your ordinary person on the street realizes. You cannot constitutionally harass a person for sleeping if there are no legal places to do it.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. And, you know, for judges to continue to uphold this fiction that there's some legal justification for this is standing human rights abuse that Danner is colluding with. And I'm afraid I don't have any sympathy for him.
Well, I'm not asking for yours or your listeners' sympathy. I'm saying, oddly, you know, if all else fails, stall to get in front of Danner if it's an absurd thing. I'm not saying if he has to think on the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about one specific kind of situation. There may be a pattern here where he's, I wouldn't even call it humane, just a little more rational than all the others.
I don't. Well, that's certainly
in this one regard.
It's your opinion on that, and that's fine. I saw him recently. I saw him recently take a county camping case and essentially prosecute the guy, even though the prosecution was failing to do a good job to do that. And he ruled essentially that the roadside arresting exception did not apply to the county, the whole county. So what it means is if you're driving through the county, then you cannot pull over to the side of the road if you're tired under Danner's interpretation of the law, even though it's explicitly provided for in the county code by Gary Patton. And admittedly, this was in a section that referred to the no camping zones, but any sensible judge, I think, would have extended it to the entire county as really understood to be the case by the Sheriff's Department. So the Sheriff's Department has one understanding, and Danner, who has been was DA for 20 years, I would remind our audience, and should know what the practice is in this matter, is saying that it's not legal to pull over to the side of the road unless you happen to be in the 5% area of the county covered by the tiny no camping zone. So the rest of the county, you pull over, you're subject to an $81 ticket, which Danner reduced to $50 in the case of...
So you're saying he got it all backwards.
I'm saying he specifically and intentionally ruled that way as his own form of the social policy, I think, that he wants to mm-hmm. institute, which is bad stuff.
But they all do that, don't they? You know that.
Yep, they sure do.
I wanted to tell you about another thing I've heard about. Maybe you already know. I doubt if it's been on the air yet. But do you know the car lot that both sells and rents by daily at the corner of Laurel Broadway Bridge and Front Street? Next to the empty theater?
I heard that the city council was giving them a bad shake and...
It sounds like the whole town, you know. It's like, oh, George, oh, the guy with money. You know, so therefore, fuck you, because you're just a little businessman. That's what it sounded like to me.
Mm. I know that Scott Graham talked about it at some length in an interview, but I don't know if we've played that interview.
I talked to the owner, and he really feels shafted, and I stupidly said, well, maybe you should talk to... Chris Curran, he considers himself a neighborhood guy, and he seems yeah. more responsive than the other people. And Chris gave him, he said, I already did that, and it was terrible. He gave him some kind of, that's not my aesthetics kind of answer, and just, in effect, flipped him off.
Now, my co-host may have a comment on that.
Well, I frankly don't have a comment on that, but what I do have a comment on is the sleeping in your car. At one point, I was... carrying some blankets in my car to the laundry.
Criminal blanket carrier.
To launder them. And a policeman yeah. pulled me over and threatened to give me a ticket because I was carrying blankets in my car. He thought I was sleeping in my car. Now, I didn't have a comment about the other thing.
Well, that's an interesting... I remember
have you ever talked to that officer before at all?
Yeah, I've seen him around town. I know who he is, and okay. he knows who I am.
This was an interesting case. I remember we talked about a year ago, and you gave a great interview on the subject. And I think it's really illustrative of how this law is not, you know, dealing with real health and safety concerns, but simply is a catch-all that police use to interrogate, stop, question, harass people that they choose to use it on. It's not, you know, it doesn't serve a reasonable social purpose. And there are other laws that can deal with any of the real concerns that come up, as was pointed out by our very own mayor a year ago when he made his... I guess one of his two attempts to do something about the sleeping ban in a sort of a scattergun, shotgun way without talking to any homeless activists, so it was sort of a doomed to fail effort, after which when Byers hit him on the snout with a newspaper, he went home and like a little puppy under the rug and never came out again. And as you know, we're talking, of course, I know, Linda, you're the head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, you're the chair. You went to Sugar a couple weeks ago and asked, you know, did they put on the agenda? You were directed by your task force to ask him to put on the agenda the item that said stop the sleeping and camping ban enforcement until there are safe zones set up, and he just said no way.
I talked to him about it several times before we went sort of in mass at the City Council Oral Communications, and yeah, you were right when you said something earlier. His position seems to be, I don't have the votes, so there's no point in dealing with it.
When in fact, I think the Homeless Issues Task Force understood that there weren't the votes there necessarily, but that an issue had to be raised publicly somewhere down the line to get the votes, because if you keep the issue in the dark, if you keep it in the doghouse, if you try to hide it until you think everything is ready to go, it never will be ready to go, because the public will not be able to understand that the issue is one that needs to be talked about publicly, that deserves to be talked about publicly. I suppose, you know, it will anyway in a certain sense, but I say when politicians begin to talk about it publicly, then there's a certain sector of the public that feels more comfortable talking about it as well.
When politicians impede the normal progress of a community discourse, in my opinion, they're creating a certain degree or level of fascism.
Fascism.
No matter who they think they are, they're in fact stifling people, and that's what lets a lot of domesticants have these sordid and untrue beliefs about people that don't just happen to have a house. You know, they take the one bad experience and condemn this growing population as if it, I've had people talk to me to that effect. You know.
Mm.
same thing about welfare, you know. How dare you stick up for people that get food stamps? Why aren't there these couple of cheeks, you know? So let's condemn the other couple thousand of them in town.
It's it's a sort of a know-nothing attitude. I wonder, you're having another meeting of your Homeless Issues Task Force on...
Monday, this coming Monday.
That's, what, 4 days away, 5 days away, December 27th?
2 days after Christmas.
And are you going to be taking some action or asking some action to be taken now that you've been slapped across the chops by sugar and
nothing on the agenda thing?
Yeah, in response to nothing on the agenda. Plus, I think Sugar said something to the effect that you guys had a sort of a secret meeting that we were able to crash on the Sunday before the city council meeting. And he said something to the effect that you bring it up on the oral communications period, and even if we won't put anything on the agenda, we'll discuss it. And I got it. For the life of me, I have not been able to find anything on the tape that Sugar said about the sleeping ban, even after you and others brought it up as he requested.
Well, he said something like,
communication.
If you people give me some good openers or a nice lead, and now I guess maybe we didn't do our job, but there were, what, seven different people coming at it from different angles, not just task force members?
Well, maybe he wanted a soft shoe and a couple of good songs. I mean, you know, maybe that's what will be required to get him to respond.
I don't think that's going to get it. I think he needs to hear from people who live in houses as well as people who don't. And people who hear how much the tickets are and how people get indentured slavery out of it because you don't happen to have a disposable income. If people knew that, they'd start calling the city. And I don't think we should leave it to just the strong ladies at WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I think everybody in the community has a responsibility to know about this.
Well, I encourage people who are...
Can you believe there's like 30 churches in this town just in the city of Santa Cruz?
I do. But I think based on what you're saying, I'll use this as an opportunity to pitch a call for all you listeners out there, even though those of you who called before, you can pick up your phone tonight and call 420-5020. That's 420-5020. And tell Mayor Sugar, you know, it's time to get a special session going and discuss this issue. Apparently they're having some session about development on January 4th, but they don't have anything about human rights problems with the homeless, even though, you know, that issue has been unanimously brought to their attention by their own $10,000 Homeless Issues Task Force. So give a call to 420-5020, and I would say, please, let me finish this minute, Linda, and then just ask them to put on the agenda the recommendation that your Homeless Issues Task Force unanimously passed, which is stop harassing people under the sleeping and camping ordinance until you have safe zones, and call a special session to put that on the agenda. 420-5020. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to add that, you know, people can suggest temporary safe zones, either like between now and that agenda.
I'm sorry, say that again?
People calling the city could be suggesting temporary safe zones.
Sure, I think...
Because they'd feel safe parking themselves if they had to sleep outside.
I saw a list of 9 of them, which I think, you know, ranging from Harvey West Park, Mission Street Extension, city parking lots, county parks, city parks. There's plenty of suggestions. It's just these people have the determination they're not going to do anything unless this zone is levitating 100 feet above the city, preferably blacked out by clouds. You know, I mean, it seems pretty cool. You know, possibly, you know, 30 miles off the coast to the west. You know, that would.
Well, I don't want to get off and berate the council members.
Certainly
I think
not.
You've covered it.
They're
not going to do anything, and they believe that it's the will of the people to act like there's not a problem, and that's why they give explicit, if not perhaps implicit, but it seems explicit to me, permission to the police department to use a double standard in enforcing the laws that are meant to control the appearance of bombs. You know, that's what our city does, and the police continue to get away with it, like whisking men off the streets with the tape you were playing. I think that's just another example of this. You know, we'll wink and turn the other way if you think they're poor or you've seen them too often. That's the policy the police presume.
Are you? I know you have an agenda coming up for this Homeless Issues Task Force. Are you going to make any more specific recommendations to the council? Because I think that even when they ignore your recommendations, at least the community knows that you're making these recommendations.
Well, I don't think the community does. That's why your show is important, and I think we need to find other modes too.
Mm-hmm. Press conference, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of
community meetings too.
Go ahead.
May I interject a comment, please?
Sure.
Speaking of aggressive, Robert was mentioning earlier that he's an aggressive atheist. I think with regards to this issue, we need... Yeah, down, boy, down! He's an animal. Damn. I think we need to take more aggressive action. I mean, I'm sitting here in the studio, I'm reading this flag, and I mean, it really applies, and let me read it. I'm not sure if I can... It says, can I move this? Is it going to totally screw up? Hold on. All right. The flag says, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce the people under absolute despotism. It sounds, we've been talking about absolute despotism since we got on the radio here. It is their right, the people's right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. I think we need to take slightly more aggressive action. We're going to people who are not concerned. They're betraying the security of the people, and we need to...
I want them WTO protesters to get their butts together and start doing the same thing here in Santa Cruz. I think we'd see action mighty pronto.
Well, people get together to be anti-corporation, but they need to be pro-people, too. They need to see each other as vulnerable. And then understand how easy it is to become more vulnerable to the point where you can die just because people shun you. I mean, this government, as she's pointing out, isn't going to get there. But, you know, remember about the Heiner House?
The Heiner House, of course, was the former building that was damaged in the earthquake, and they kind of left it around for 2.5-3 years, and they decided they're going to demolish it and set up a parking lot for the police department when the police department was in its old space. A number of us, led by you, Linda LeMaster, you scofflaw, you, a union of the homeless breakaway group called Bag Ladies Revolt, occupied the Heiner House. I know I was part of the Baggy Boys Auxiliary.
That was the night the Baggy Boys Auxiliary.
Yeah. And I was a proud Baggy Boy, I'll tell you. And that actually had an ultimate effect. You were taken to... They dragged you around the courts for a couple of months after that in 1992, and you were also running for city council at that time.
Yeah, that sort of took care of any chance of getting elected, but I didn't have the means anyway. You have to have a lot of money, apparently.
But I think it ultimately had a very positive outcome. You were able to make sure that house was saved, and instead of,
I'm trying to say, but let me tell you even farther back history. The Heiner House was built as a duplex, and it was a beautiful old solid redwood inside in the stairs, Victorian. Two families lived there, and it was big enough for the way families used to be, with lots of people, multi-generations. And then it had got turned over to Parks and Rec, as the city at that time was turning a lot of residents into offices, like where the personnel department still is to this day, is used to be somebody's home. So that history had come and gone. The earthquake had come and gone. That building was damaged, and Parks and Rec had to hurry out of there, although they left a lot of their goodies and papers behind. The building was condemned by engineers who weren't around to stick up for their work later when we squatted the building. It had been declared technically unsafe to be inside. There was a young couple who'd been squatting on the ceiling, the roof, before we showed up and turned it into kind of a political moment. But the outcome was that first they were going to turn it into SROs when they got over the idea they could just destroy the building. Then they found a site for it. And then because of the ordinary dealing with the bureaucrats kind of public pressure and a lot of phone calls in, they decided to go along with the idea of letting it be for families. And then they put programs on it, like you have to be a single parent that wants to go to college. I don't know if that's still in place, but you know how they get it. They think if you don't, know how to be subservient, you probably shouldn't have your own life. I'm being vague with this day here. I'm not referring to the city council, although that is who set the same kind of thing up happening at Page Smith Community House. Anyway, that's just a trend. If we survive it, sometimes we can create autonomy out of it. But the point is that that building was doomed to demolition. And through surprise acts of small groups of people, really, it went through at least three phases of retrieving and reestablishing.
I think it's really important. I think the community can have an impact. I mean, you see that in many different cases, ranging from one individual's stand, as Julia Butterfly was able to produce a limited victory over the timber barons up north,
yeah,
to Seattle WTO protesters in mass being able to, you know, actually, I think they prompted Clinton to make changes in his in his labor deals, because he got nervous because it was all being publicized, and that provoked third world countries to block WTO processes. Now the WTO is doing business as usual. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
But you know, it had a major energizing effect.
And I think when you look closer to home at the same kind of success stories, you realize what risks individuals are taking. But when they throw themselves together with some kind of support team and intent and keep their intent in mind, things are accomplished, like the expansion and finally the opening of the original River Street shelter, which has since degraded itself into a place for wing nuts only or something.
Yeah, for people with mental illness designations in the main. Although I think there are 15 or 16 homeless spaces, although it's got to be case managed. So Casey wants to say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, when you're talking about the WTO meetings and going before the council and addressing issues, I mean, even though the WTO is still pretty much doing business as usual, and even though the council really isn't listening, it was a good opportunity to get the word out, education, and I think that's like most of the battle. You know, once the people gain an awareness, it's going to be a lot harder to keep people separated and overpowered.
This is a great conversation. Yeah. Linda, I'm going to ask you to kind of sum it up, because I want other people to be able to join us.
I got out what I wanted to.
Okay.
And maybe should announce to the public, and especially people that have experienced homelessness, the meeting Monday is at 5:30 at the Civic Center's ABC room on Church Street.
5:30 on Monday, come to hear and speak at the Homeless Issues Task Force, which I'm hoping will expand its oral communications period so people can, from the streets, can really bring forth issues and you guys can respond. I've been pretty critical. I've called you the Homeless Issues Task Farce because I've seen, you know, your $20,000 paid staff member who's, in my mind, an anti-homeless proxy for the mayor chosen in a closed-door process. And I've gone on to that at length. That's Don Lane we're talking about, former mayor. But, you know, I've also seen you guys come up with some great resolutions, and now if you can take it one step further, ratchet it up, and actually start appealing directly and clearly to the community, because the council obviously isn't listening, I think you're on your way.
And hopefully we can do that, but imagine the next step after that, which a group of dissimilar people interested in a single problem disconnect from any legislated alliances like belonging to the city council.